Well, good evening. We have tonight something which to my mind is probably one of the most difficult chapters in all of literature on mysticism. Mostly because it isn't something tangible. And also because you have to work with it with a faculty which has no reality. And as a result, we find ourselves reaching out or in or up or down, and nowhere can we get a finger lock on the thing we're seeking. And that's precisely what finally forces us to let go and to stop striving to understand it, to touch it, to embrace it, to encompass it. And eventually, it forces us to stop being that which we have thought we ourselves are. This is a self-demolition program. And the harder you strive to find something, the more you realize the only way you can find is for you to disappear. Because it has been made very clear that unless we find self, there is no God. It was Jesus who took God out of the sky and reveal the presence of God on earth. It was Jesus who again, after many of the prophets before him, had revealed the sacred word, who showed that there is a presence in a man, and that presence in the man, within the consciousness of that individual, is God. And for revealing I, the Father on earth, there was a crucifixion. The sacredness of the word I has always been there, and Joel tells us how sacred it was to the Hebrews. Only once a year could a priest, and only then in the sanctuary, speak the word. And never where another person could ever hear it, because the word I, the sacred word, if misunderstood, would have a person running around saying, I am God. And humanly, there is no such thing as I am God, unless one has experienced I, and has learned that you never speak that word, but rather you feel it, you live it, you experience it, but always you let I speak for itself. For the power of I is not in what you or I say about it, but what it announces within us. Now, we all seek fulfillment, and at various levels we attain it. But again, you have discovered that what you call fulfillment, humanly, is not the fulfillment that is required of you divinely. Your true fulfillment must come only by coming to the Father through I. Whosoever cometh to the Father must come through me. The I, the risen Christ. And so we look within, and always looking within, we wonder, where is it, this within? And for a while we are sort of turning to our stomach. At another time we're turning to our heart, sometimes to our brain. We have the idea that I within means within the body. But the I that we're seeking can never be within the body for this reason. I is infinite spirit and is never contained within a physical form. We learn that all physical forms are contained within I. That the visible is always contained within the invisible. And so when we look for I, we're not going to look inside of our bodies. We who are looking for I must remember that I, being spirit, will never be visible. And so you cannot seek a visible I. And I, being infinite, can never be localized or confined. Finally, we learn that I need not be sought because I am my own identity. Rather, I stand still and behold the I of my being declaring itself. Now the word I in itself has no power. You can say it, you can speak it, you can stand before the flood and the tide and the earthquake and say I, and they'll run right over you. And so we have to go much deeper than mere articulation. We have to go so deep. Well, perhaps the best way to see how deep we must go is to learn a beautiful thing about the Bible, about the New Testament in particular. Suppose for a moment that you could visualize yourself to be just pure spirit. You're looking over the earth, looking for an outlet through which your spirit could function. And then you found an outlet. You found a man who let your spirit function in him. But he did it a certain way. He was willing to die to his own human selfhood. And when he died to his human selfhood, the spirit became alive in him, because now there was no two. When he was willing to let the human self die, while in the flesh, even before crucifixion, the human self had died. So there was no human me, there was only I and the Father. I within and the Father are one. When he let that human self release its will, its desire, its plans, its own personal hopes, and there was none there but the will of the Father, that was when the Spirit in him functioned and guided his life. And so we see that as soon as Spirit functions in him, there is no him any longer. There is only spirit. Never is there a man and the spirit. There is a man unaware of his spiritual identity, and that spiritual identity does not function in his experience. Or there is a man aware of his spiritual identity, steps aside and lets the spirit function. Then only the one is present, never the human sense of things. And to all intents and purposes, the human self is no more. It may appear to human sense, but it is no more. All that is there is I, the invisible spirit. Now, while you and I, in our human forms, are seeking this I and trying to be still enough to hear the voice of I within, this man received the voice. This man received the spirit. This man rose above a human self into I, without opposites. And so the real secret of the Bible is this. When you looked out upon this man, there was no man there. There was no human form there. There was only I. And when this man spoke, there was no man speaking. There was only I speaking. And that is why I spoke there, because there was no man there. There was one who stepped aside to let I be the only presence. And this I that walked the earth, this invisible Christ, which men call the visible Jesus, this was I. But I, who stood out there, am the same I that stands within you. And when you saw I out there doing this and doing that, you were seeing yourself. When you heard I out there saying this and saying that, you were hearing yourself, the same self that you could not hear within your own human consciousness. You were hearing out there the same self that you could not see with spiritual eyes. You were seeing out there. For I am that which men have called Jesus. That I is the I of our being. And it appeared physically where we could see it. It spoke audibly where we could hear it. And so we have 5,000 or 10,000 words it spoke, which we would like to hear, and which it has been speaking within us all this time. Now, the reason there was a visible I, called Jesus, is to demonstrate to us the great power which this I brings into your experience, and there was no other way to demonstrate it. Now, everything you saw done by the I that men call Jesus can and will ultimately be fulfilled within yourself, because that I is yourself. And it is important now to do exactly as the one called Jesus did in order to prepare a way so that the I of your being can rise into your consciousness. Fulfillment is finding I, the sacred word, the mystical I, the invisible Savior, the only self there is in the universe, I, which is God. And this I took Moses and made him a leader. This I gave Solomon the wisdom with which he has become known to the world of men. This I was his secret too, just as it was the secret of Moses. And the chapter points out that Solomon built his great temple by promising the workers that if they completed the temple, when they were completed, he would give them the magic password that would ever earn them a master's wage. And that's what kept them on the job. To earn the right to hear this magic password, which would take them without script anywhere they went, and always fulfill them. Because I is self-fulfilling. Now, I, being your true name, your true identity, your true self, being infinite and being spirit, is neither male nor female, and has no age. And the I of your being was present when your form began in your mother's womb. The I of your being brought the form forth in your mother's womb. Your mother and your father never saw the I that you are, they saw the form. And you humanly have never seen the I that they are, you saw the form. I is the only parent and the only son. And this is the immaculate self-conception of the universe. This is the I that we must make room for by the slow dissolution of all our human concepts about form, about matter, about age, about the various things that are the persons, places, and things of this world. Now then, this is no ordinary quest. It is not for the faint-hearted. And even though we might be satisfied along the way to stop, any time we're willing to stop, the attainment or realization of identity is impossible. There is no place to stop. For I is infinite and must be accepted only in its infinite qualities. Now the miracle of I in you is this. It will not function unless you demand that it does. If you wish to quicken your progress, it is necessary that you make a demand on I, and not vocally. Your demand on I is your trust in its powers. And unless you can walk on the waters of spirit and make that demand by confidence and trust in the presence of I, you will discover it does not enter your experience whatsoever. But on the other hand, when you are able to put up your sword and learn the lesson of Gethsemane, that regardless of the crisis that faces you, regardless of the personal calamities that you may envision, put up thy sword and let the I of your being be your only protector, and that's how you make your demand upon I. And when you do that, you will find you have the capacity to do it only because something in you knows that I can never leave you or forsake you, and that I is the power, the presence of the living God. Then that demand, expressed by your trust, your confidence, even in the face of disaster, of crucifixion, of human extinction, that demand will always bring forth the quick, sharp, powerful expression of the invisible presence of God.
The word illumination is another word for initiation. And in this experience, we pass from a teaching into actual contact. The words are gone, the books are gone, the tapes are gone. The human consciousness is gone. There is a resurrection. There is a crossing out and an entering in. So that in the moment of initiation, no longer do we say, I am the Father of One, but it becomes a realized fact which needs no words, For now I and the Father are one and the same. There is no human consciousness to voice the words. The word has become flesh. This particular level takes us into a new realm, a realm in which I live, yet not I. The grace of the Father liveth my life. There ceases to be a human me, a master state of consciousness takes over. It's as if we had been between two life streams, the life stream of Mammon and the life stream of God, and now the life stream of Mammon is no more. We have made our transition from that life stream, this world, to the life stream of God. And in that measure, we now have the Christ mind, the Christ body, and we speak with a new tongue of spirit in which the power of spirit, the harmony, the truth, the life, the love are functioning as the cause and the effect. Cause and effect are drawn into one in the now, in the here. And the beginning and the end are simultaneous. This is the speaking with tongues. This master consciousness is pure consciousness and is totally independent of matter, time, space, and the activity of matter in time and space. The pure consciousness is independent of the effects in and of this world. I, the master state of consciousness within you, am now you, and I alone govern the kingdom, and therefore this world ceases to be a power. The will of the Father glorifies itself in you, as you. The parenthesis of humanhood is erased. Now, of course, initiation cannot come because you will it to be, nor can it come because you're diligent. Nor does it come because you have special privileges. It is not even something that you can earn. There must be a readiness, just as if the will of the bud on the tree couldn't produce a flower. There must be a readiness to receive the light of spirit, and this readiness is not determined by the human consciousness. It is, you might say, the result of all that has happened, not only in this lifespan, but in your previous lives, bringing you up to that moment of readiness at which an act of grace becomes the living divine self in you, releasing you from the margins of a human consciousness. And this act of grace is independent of the will of man. Now we find that we no longer have life because we have a body and a heart and lungs and a liver, but rather we are absent from the body. And life is now living the body instead of the body living life. We are past the point of personalizing, materializing, and finitizing. We have made a transition of consciousness in which life moves from within the body to outside the body. And that life is our new consciousness. The world has been taught through religion that because Jesus made an ascension, that he made it possible for each of us who believe in him to attain this ascension without going through the same tribulations and levels of progress that he went through. This would be a vicarious ascension, and it is impossible. The way to the crown is through the cross. There must be a crucifixion of the personal self, a preparation for the ascension, a purification of all material sense, numerous trials, and numerous temptations at many levels. Temptations and trials that increase in tempo and depth as we come into a higher level, simply for the purpose of preventing us from relaxing into our new found level of consciousness and saying, this is as far as I'm going. I made it up to here and this is far enough for me. That would be like a twig saying, I won't have any more flowers this spring or summer. The will of the Father in you will be done. There is no place where you can say, this plateau is my limit. Ascension never stops. Now there comes a big question, which Joel puts to us, inasmuch as dying is what we're trying to do, and inasmuch as most of us are dissatisfied with our progress, a good yardstick is to say to yourself, am I dying fast enough? How do I know how fast I should die or if I am dying in the right way? And so he puts it very bluntly this way. If you really want to know if you're dying fast enough, ask yourself some questions. To what degree are you still preserving human life? If a burglar came into your home, would you shoot him? Would you live your life in such a way at this moment to preserve your life in preference to someone else's? Do you believe that we should throw the bomb before other countries throw it? If you were called to be crucified, could you put up the sword? Or would you feel the need for self-defense? Would you kill someone else to protect yourself? These are human ways, and of course, if we find that we would just as soon kill someone else to protect ourselves, shoot the burglar, throw the bomb, and so forth, then Joel says, you are not dying fast enough. You still have a human selfhood. And as long as you have that human selfhood, to talk about initiation or illumination is really idle conversation. Well, this brings us to grips with the fact that the human self is the barrier. and that when Scripture tells us we must lay down our life to find our life, it is opening to us the realization that there is no way to the light of truth, the Christ of self, except through laying down the human physical concept of self. Until there is an erasing of the human consciousness, there can be no entry of the divine consciousness, no dissolution of the false concepts which keep us earthbound in the ups and downs, the goods and the evils of this world. And so we press on and discover that to the degree that we are able to give up this life, to that degree and to that degree alone, can we attain that life that we are seeking. And the real secret behind it is the one life. As long as there is a little self seeking a bigger self, we have inadvertently permitted the barrier to remain. The little self has no existence, and its seeking of the bigger self is an admission, an acceptance, and a perpetuation of duality. All this becomes a great paradox to the human mind. How can I find it if I will not seek it? And doesn't the Bible tell me to seek and I shall find? Yes, it does. And the literal acceptance of that has been perpetuating this duality for all these centuries. Seek ye first the kingdom of God is a statement that brings us to seeking the Spirit within. But when you are seeking the Spirit within, when you are reading such words as, while you're living between two worlds, you must remember too that there is an end to seeking. There is an end to living between two worlds. If you live between two worlds forever, then you've always got one foot in the world that isn't, and another foot in the world that is. When you read a book, don't you come to the end of it sometime? Do you still stay and read the book and reread the book? There must be graduation day. And so the seeking is fine. Seek, seek, seek. But when you find it, why keep seeking what you have found? When you find the Spirit within, the seeking is over. Now the accepting begins. I have sought and I have found. The words that told me to seek 2,000 years ago, I'm not still seeking. I'm not even still between two worlds. I have discovered that there is one kingdom, and I am living in it. Why then am I between this and that when only this exists? I erase the false parenthesis. I erase the false belief in a this world. And until I do, I'm asking initiation to come out of the blue and hit me in the head before I have done the preparation work, the purification, before I have laid down my belief in a life existing in this non-existent world. Perhaps it's because some things even more basic and more mundane are still lingering in my consciousness, such as these human barriers. For instance, there may be still within us the desire for revenge, a nature that remains unforgiving, a nature that remains unwilling to look out through the eyes of love in spite of what I see, there may still be in us desire for power, for might, for the expression of my will over your will and his will and her will. Then, of course, I may still be personalizing evil in many forms, seeking a better human life, living in a body consciousness, attracted to the pleasures of this world. To the human mind, these are normal things. Remove them and life seems hardly worthwhile to the average person. But in transition, as the consciousness is leavened by the spirit, we find that there is a change. It's like the child growing up. You may not see the imperceptible daily change, but when you put the child against the wall, you find he's grown an inch. And so the change in us may be imperceptible until we look back even 3 months ago and say, my goodness, was that me? How different I was then. Why, I would no longer do anything now that I did 3 months ago than the man in the moon. I'm a totally different person. And so we find that we can look at things we never were able to forgive, and now we can. But somehow, some reason, the human animosities dissolve and love begins to supplant them. Our mortal beliefs begin to fade and die. Even our physical sense of life undergoes a subtle change. The same physical pleasures, in many forms, change. The day on the golf course, the viewing of the TV program, the picnic, the movie, the social affairs, the human relationships, all subtly undergo a new focus. Now evil is no longer pinned on people. We see the impersonal nature of it. We even find that in some sense, we're beginning to dedicate our life to something outside of ourselves. We may be surprised to find this comes very naturally. And all of it is because the Spirit of God within us is coming alive. The soul center is opening. We have such sublime innate confidence that we're not even seeking a better human life. But rather we're feeling that the will of Spirit in me is so perfect and so unopposed that it is becoming the flesh. And the perfect will become the perfect flesh. I can take hands off and relax in the knowledge that Spirit is living itself as me. My food is now divine consciousness. And I know that I am one with the rhythm of life. All this is the path leading to the experience of initiation. Ah, but there comes a rude awakening. My newfound consciousness was so comfortable. I was being lulled into the false confidence of one who says, God is with me now. I can coast a little while. I'm healthy, I'm wealthy, I'm wise. I'm really blessed. I even begin to feel that I have been specially chosen. Oh, whoops, there goes the roof falling down. Jesus was specially chosen, wasn't he? So specially chosen that he had Gethsemane and Golgotha. Before his cloud of glory came the cross. Our little crosses are nothing. The real trials are about life and death. And we're going to have them because they alone can lift us. And that lifting is out of the gravitation of the third dimension, out of the mental consciousness, out of the conditioning of centuries, out of the body, out of the physical selfhood, out of the old mortal man. We can't die to that just out of a year or two of reading the Bible or closing our eyes. There must be these great trials, these dark nights of the soul. And so you know that there will be anguish, periods of barrenness, moments of despair when you're really torn apart. You feel unworthy. You feel alone. You feel deserted. God, why hast thou forsaken me? You feel cast out. But all of this is necessary. This great emptying out is vital because it is the preparation for the light. And when you think you have weathered every storm, there comes the final dark night. When the command is, die. Your personal selfhood must go. There must be a complete surrender of selfhood in order to attain the height. This was so well known in the old wisdom schools that we're told they actually went through actual burials and loss of life and resurrection in order to enact and put the initiate through the experience of crucifixion and resurrection and ascension. We do on the spiritual path nothing but surrender to the Father within until all personal selfhood is crossed out and the divine selfhood takes its place, where nothing is left in you but the light of the divine selfhood, where the realization comes that God is where I stand. That's why this is holy ground. Where I stand now is God. And now there is no me. There is no human self. There is no mortal being. I, as a human, as a personality, as a physical being, have ceased to be. I am crossed out. I have no human consciousness. I am an infinite zero. There is not even a remnant of selfhood left. Joel says that at this point you may witness a tremendous light, a filmy cloud, or a pillar of cloud descending, which even takes form as an individual, and you may behold God incarnating as man, Father becoming Son, so that now I, God, is now I, man. I am He. He that should come, I am. And the light of God is now manifest as man. So we see what Jesus meant when he said, I am the light. Thou seest me, thou seest the Father that sent me. At that moment, he was the light of God manifest as man. The Word made flesh, and there was a new form standing there. The man of flesh, human flesh, had been transmuted into the pure light of the Father appearing to human sense as a human man.